Welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio, and today my guest is Dr. Iyabo Ogikutu, and I hope I've said that correctly. She is a board-certified pediatrician, a fellow of the American Academy of Pediatrics. She received her medical degree at the College of Medicine, University of Lagos in Nigeria. She has been practicing medicine for 27 years, and currently conducts a practice in Atlanta, Georgia, where she lives with her two daughters. She has been teaching and mentoring medical students for 13 years and serving a low-income and poorly advantaged community in Georgia where her practice is located. Dr. Ogikutu. Dr. Ogikutu's first book is titled Permanent Happiness, which was published in 2017 in May. She hopes her writing and her story will inspire and empower young women. She began in December of 2015 writing after her dear father passed. She wrote another book, which is not yet published and is currently working on her third book. Dr. Ogikutu hosted a reception at the United Nations on September in 2017 and gave a presentation on peace and permanent happiness. She has since participated in 2008 in two more speaking events at the United Nations and is committed to promoting and supporting peace on many levels, which she believes is the gateway to world peace. Welcome, 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 Iyabo. And I'm so sorry if
okay.
I butchered your name there.
It's okay. Thank you, Dr. Donadio. It's such a pleasure to be here with you. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it was my pleasure to speak with you at length in our pre-interview and to talk about your life and how you evolved into becoming a pediatrician here in the States, and how you evolved into becoming a writer and being deeply committed to peace and happiness and sharing that with other people. So what I'd like you to do, which is what I like to do with all of our guests, is invite you to take us on your journey from where you were born and how you were raised. You came from a wonderful, wonderful family, and how this family crafted you and how your life circumstances crafted you to become who you are today, which is an advocate and inspiration for permanent happiness.
Thank you, Dr. Donadio. Yes, so where do I start from? First of all, I do want to tell the listeners that I miss my mommy and daddy. My mom passed away in February of this year at the age of 86. So she basically just passed away a few months ago. So I'm still grieving her. My dad passed away 3 years ago, also at the age of 86. I had wonderful parents. So as you can imagine, the grieving process will never end, but I just relish the memories. I was born in Lagos, Nigeria, which is in West Africa. For people who don't know quite where Nigeria is, it's in West Africa. And I was born into a wonderful family. I really cannot overemphasize the importance of parents who are actually present in their kids' lives. It's not that my parents didn't work. They worked a lot, but they also showed us love, you know, as much as they could. And they were present. They were caring parents. I was the last born of six children. Most of my siblings actually went to school outside of Nigeria in Europe. But myself and my immediate sister went to school in Lagos, Nigeria. And my parents were always very encouraging. I was a good student. I say that humbly. I did start to flourish in the science subject from when I was in secondary school. And if anyone's listening who has any roots in Africa or even some other parts of the world, you know, once your parents have a slight inclination that you love the science subject, you know what that means. That means, do you think you want to be a doctor? Because every parent in Nigeria wants the only three valid careers are being a doctor, being an engineer, being a lawyer. Anything else is like, are you sure that's a career? Can you even make a living from that? So anyway, basically, I mean, that's how it was then. Things may be changing now. You know, there may be more parents who are more flexible to their kids going into the creative arts and, you know, other areas like that. So, but I was interested in the science subjects. I was interested in medicine. They didn't force me into it. I had an uncle. Actually, my dad's nephew at the time was one of the top pediatric neurosurgeons in Lagos. And he also inspired me to be a pediatrician. I would meet with him and he would tell me all the wonderful stories about, you know, helping kids survive and all that. So he was my first inspiration. And then I got into medical school at the age of 16, which I know sounds really, really young, but it's not unusual for Africa and also parts of Europe for people to start college at 16. You have an option to start at 16 or 18. So I got into medical school first, you know, first attempt. I finished, I graduated when I was 22. And I just had big dreams, big hopes of leaving the country and going to practice either in the States or in the UK. The States seemed really far away at the time. It seemed like there were a lot more steps, more complexities, you know, with moving straight from Nigeria to the States. So my first stepping stone was moving to England. And that's what I did then. So, but my parents were wonderful parents. My dad and mom, they were always involved in everything we did. They came to every school event, every sporting event. They read every school report, you know, they helped me wade through life, choosing friends that were good for me. I did mostly observing. They didn't, honestly, I don't really remember my parents sitting me down and telling me, don't do this, do that, don't do this. Maybe occasionally my mom would do that, but I really learned a lot from just observing them. My mom was a great inspiration for me because she didn't go to school. She didn't have the privilege of formal education. She could not write English. She could not read English, but she had the wisdom of life. She was a very wise, elegant, and beautiful woman, and she had quite a few successful businesses, which she used to build several houses, and the rent from those houses were, you know, you helped her make a living. She and my dad were the perfect partners. I'm not saying they were perfect. You know, nobody, no relationship is perfect. But from what I saw, they complemented each other really well. They supported, yeah, they supported each other, you know, in their careers, emotionally. My dad was this very gentle, humble man with very few words, but very effective. You know what I mean, Dr. Donadio? You know those people who don't talk very much, but they're just very effective people. My dad had very few words, but when he did talk, he had a real good sense of humor, and he always had very wise words. So I just saw how he loved his wife. My mom had the many words. She was the one who liked to talk.
She was the word. Let me ask you a question. Now, let me ask you a question. You went to medical school when you were 16 years old.
Yes.
You graduated from medical school when you were 22 years old. Now,
yes.
I need to ask you this. I mean, inquiring minds want to know, did you have an adolescence? I mean, you were in medical school for 6 years, from 16 to 22. What was your life like? I mean, did you date? Were you going out, or was it the grind of medical school?
And well, it was a mixture. We partied hard and we studied hard. Medical school, I tell my friends now who are non-doctors and they don't believe me. We went to parties starting from Wednesday or Thursday through Sunday. And we would get to class on Monday morning sleepy, but then we just coped somehow. We partied hard and we studied hard. I did have an adolescence. I feel like I did. I met my then my husband who I was married to until I was 40. I met him in medical school when I was 17. So I guess we dated until I was 25. So we were together for 8 years before we got married. So, you know, I guess I was in that one relationship from when I was 17. So that's answering that part of your question. But I had the support of friends, my parents. I really didn't feel like I didn't have a true adolescence. But yeah, we worked hard and we partied hard. We had both. We had the social life and the really studious life.
Okay,
yeah.
So you graduated 22. You are in a relationship and you want to really get the most out of your education. And you decide to move to London, to England.
Yes.
So
yes.
You want to tell us about that? Did you did you go with the fiance, or how did that mm-hmm. evolve that you went to that you wound up in England?
So the fiance had actually gone ahead of me because he was, I think 1 or 2 years ahead of me in school. So he had gone ahead of me, and I shared my decision with my parents. They knew that there was a lot of brain drain going on then in Lagos. A lot of the doctors who'd graduated even years before me were either moving to, you know, to Europe or to the US. So they kind of knew that. So when I told them that I also wanted to move and just, you know, get a better life and practice somewhere where I would be happier, they were fine with it. They were a little bit apprehensive about the fact that I was, you know, eventually going in a year or two to meet with my then boyfriend. We were not even fiancé. We were 17 and he was 21. So they were kind of nervous about that. They're like, are you sure? Just be careful. Just be, you know. But they trusted me and they said, that's fine. We'll pray for you and we wish you well. And here you go with £500, which is what the exam will cost for you to be able to start practicing in England, and that's all we have. You have to figure the rest out.
But weren't you older than 17 when you moved to England? You graduated
yes.
medical school, so you were
yeah.
you were 22 at the time.
I was 22, correct? Yes, I was
yeah,
22.
Because you said you were
yeah.
17, but you were 22.
Yeah, I was 22.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I misspoke. Yes.
So you went to London, and.
Yes.
You shared with me in the pre-interview that you worked there, but it was a disappointment. It wasn't what you thought it was going to be, and
yeah.
you felt stuck. You felt very stuck working. You were there for 5 years. So tell us about your experience and how you actually got a residency in the States, which is really quite an accomplishment. But
yeah,
tell us what happened in England. Yeah.
So, yes, so I got to England with great expectations because I had visited London almost every year from the time I was 5 or 6 on holiday, because London was like the second home for a lot of middle class to upper class families in Lagos. We would always go to London on our summer holidays. So I expected that what I saw in London during those summer holidays was what I was going to get in my career and even more. London was a very international place. You'd get there and see people from all over the world. There was international cuisine. It was just nice. So I just thought as a kid then visiting that everybody was blended in and everybody got along and, you know, life would be fair. But reality, you know, sank in when I got there when I was 22. So I did pay for the exam. I passed the exam. I started my residency rotations. And then after about 1 year, I realized what I was into. I mean, a lot of the doctors there started to say, well, you will earn enough money for a living, but whether you're going to be fulfilled or not is another question. So I remained as senior house officer year in, year out, year in, year out. And senior house officer is like the lowest rank in res. Well, there's house officer, which is the lowest, and then the senior house officer. But I just couldn't see a path to becoming an attending, which is what they call consultants then in London. It was really difficult. That was one thing. I was senior house officer, even with all my experience and how hard I was working. And then I didn't have the stability of doing my residency in just one hospital. I had to keep moving. I would get a job for 6 months, then I would get another for 3 months. And then the longest time I got a stable job was for 1 year. I remember then at Edgware Hospital in London, and I was delighted, and I thought, oh, maybe this will be the beginning of progress for me. Maybe if I'm in one place for 1 year, I finally will be able to get promoted. But no, I applied for attending positions. I didn't get in, and I would see people come in from behind me who were younger than me, who graduated later than me, you know, apply for attending jobs and get them. Again, I don't want to just conclude that it was because of the color of their skin. I'm somebody, and my second book talks about human divisions, but I'm somebody who likes to see things from the practical point of view. But that was the case. It did seem like everybody who was British born was passing all the foreigners by. I mean, there were many people from Africa, from India, from Asia, who were a lot older than me and who were still senior house officer. And I started to tell myself that, yeah, but look, it's either you find a way out of this, or you remain senior house officer into your 50s, 60s. Is that what you want? So my husband at the time and I started to we made a decision and we started to make the transition to moving to the States. And it wasn't easy because we had to start studying to take the exams. There were three exams we had to take to be able to apply into residency, steps 1, 2, and 3. So we made the decision to cut back on our hours at work, and we started studying, and we did make it happen. He got a position first at Bronx, Lebanon, and then I was also admitted. I was given a position in the same hospital for a pediatric residency.
Now, he's also a physician, correct?
Yes, he's a physician also. Yes, we met in medical school. He's a family physician, yes.
So you made the plans, the three-step plans to move over to the States. And when did that happen? I mean, what the time, you know, around what time frame in your life was that?
That was in 1998. I was 28 years old.
Okay.
So I got to London when I was 23 and I left at 28.
Wonderful. And when you got here, you wanted to start your own practice. Yes? Tell us about that.
I wanted to. I had observed my parents. They were both entrepreneurs. I loved their life. Subconsciously, I had told myself I wanted a life like theirs, where their time was flexible. They got to come to school to attend all our events. They, you know, worked when they, you know, they made their own schedule. And I knew I wanted that. I tried to make that happen in England. I saw that it was impossible. So when I got there here, I guess that was in my subconscious. I'd heard of many foreign doctors who'd opened their own practices, and I was fixated on that. But I knew I had to at least get a job somewhere first and work with somebody. And I did that. I did get a job, and I did not like it. I worked there for 9 months. I wasn't happy. I worked a lot. It was just not what I wanted. So I resigned. I honestly resigned without a plan that I was going to open my own practice, but I knew that I wasn't going to have an income for a while doing that. And I was fine with it because I knew I had to make that sacrifice. So I left after 9 months and I started the process of opening my own practice. It wasn't easy, but at the end of the day, I'm glad I went through all the obstacles to open it. Funding, like I told you, funding for the practice wasn't easy. I could not get a loan easily. I finally did get a high interest loan from a bank, from an Indian guy who owned a bank in Florida. And I took that and I opened the practice with faith. And it's open today. There's two doctors there that I hired, and I have 7 support staff, and it's still serving the community today. So that made me feel very fulfilled because I'm helping a lot. I know it's a profitable practice, but then I'm serving a population that not many people want to see. I see mainly Medicaid patients, but there's a big refugee population just 2 miles behind my practice. But I see people from all over the world. I call my practice the United Nations. I say that on every interview. People who've heard me talk probably have heard that. And that's because, I mean, name any country, they probably have stepped through my doors. Honestly, there's a lot of people from all over the world that come. So it's been very fulfilling to do that. Again, it wasn't easy, but I managed to pull it off.
Well, it's quite an accomplishment, to say the least. I mean, I speak to doctors all the time, and getting a residency alone is a huge, getting a job from overseas is a wonderful thing. You mentioned two things. You mentioned faith. You said you had a lot of faith that you could do it, and you did. And we're going to have to take a break, a little commercial break. But when we come back, we want to talk about the word faith. And also, I know that you have 2 daughters. So we want to talk about them and where they came in on this story.
Okay.
So when we come back from a break, we will jump right in there. So listeners, don't go away. We will be back with Dr. Iyabo Ojikutu.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and #1 national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals. To develop mindful, pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
Back. Today I am talking to Iyabo Ojikutu. Dr. Ojikutu is a board certified pediatrician and a fellow of the American Academy of Pediatrics. And she has been sharing with us her very interesting story and journey from her native Lagos, Nigeria, to her being in private practice and now being an author here in the United States. Her books are written to inspire and empower young women. Her first book is Permanent Happiness, and we're going to get to talk about a little bit about permanent happiness as well. Iyabo, before the break, we mentioned the word faith, and we talked about your two children. Tell us about, you have an interesting story, because you were born into one faith and then you changed your faith, and we'd love to hear, you know, how that either assisted or, you know, maybe increased the challenge of all that you've done.
Yes, so I was born into a Muslim family. My parents were both Muslim until they passed away. They did. They were flexible and open to other religions. They didn't look down on any religion. But yeah, all I knew was Islam growing up. And I did pray the Muslim way. I did go to Arabic school. Then in Nigeria, after I got back from school a few days a week, I would go to Arabic school where we were taught how to read and write Arabic. I read the Quran, you know, back to back quite a few times. And I was a happy soul. That's all I knew. And I loved it. And the Quran, what I read in the Holy Quran was all about peace and being a good person. But I did have, as my immediate sister then was a Christian, and I say was because she's no longer living, God bless her soul. But she was the one who first of all introduced me to Christianity. She, in secondary school, she decided to select Bible knowledge as one of her elective subjects. So she always read the Bible. We shared a bedroom then. So she would have her Bible on her nightstand. I would have my Quran on my nightstand. But I just observed her quietly. I just loved how she would read the Bible without having to, you know, do the ablution and pray and try for five times a day. And she was just a very peaceful, very nice person. So she sowed the seed into me, that initial seed. And then when I met my soon-to-be husband, he was Christian. And then we kind of discussed back and forth on how if we did have kids, we wanted to raise them in the same religion. And I thought, you know what? My sister already introduced me to Christianity. I'm curious about it. You're a Christian. I'm going to convert. So I did convert when I was 25. A few months before I got married. And I've remained a Christian since then. And obviously, I've read the Bible many times also. And they're very similar religions. I really feel that our faith is all about what we have in our inner self. It's in our inner soul. Whether you're Christian or Muslim or Hindu, all those are just labels. At least that's my perception, and that's the way I see it. It's really what we hold around in our hearts that is important.
Yeah, isn't it unfortunate, Iyabo, that in the world we live in today, I don't know if it's because we have anger and we have to find a vent for it, but when you really look, I mean, I shared with you, for 21 years, I had a national television show about women, and we had women from every different possible spiritual community and religion. We even had an African eclectic. Now, I don't even know what an African eclectic is, but she was.
Yeah.
We have had such a broad series of conversations, and what seems to be the case, when you really get down to it, all roads lead to Rome. Almost all religions really believe and teach the same things about how to live. I mean, religion is supposed to be a guide. It's supposed to be, you know, a roadmap of how to live a good, healthy, happy life. And it doesn't, you know, when you're looking at one and comparing it to another, the similarities are more glaring than the differences. Somebody said something. I was interviewing one guest once, and we were talking about why are people so hostile? Like, why do people get hostile? Why do people get angry? Why do they start wars? You know, what's going on there? And I heard the best definition. I heard the best explanation. There are people who in life feel that they have gotten what it is their heart wanted, whether it was a home, a family, children, a partner, spouse, a vocation. They feel they've been fulfilled in life. And then you have people on the other side who don't feel that they got theirs. They don't feel that they got the things that make life meaningful, that give life meaning and fulfill us as human beings. And it seems that whether you're talking politics or religion or just about anything, you've got people on one side that want to punish other people. You've got people on another side who really are open-armed and open-hearted. Have you seen that in your journey, in your travels? Have you experienced that?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Over and over. I've traveled quite a lot. I've met people from many countries. I have friends who are atheists, who are agnostic. I have Indian friends who are Hindu. I've met people from every religion. There's good and not so good. And I don't like saying bad people. I just say good and not so good people in every race and in every religion. So, I've met people who say they are atheists, who say, I don't believe in God, but they're actually really good and nice and kind people. Those are the ones who will check up on you when some of them are nice and kind. They say they don't believe in God, but actually they're doing all the godly things. And I have one friend who's like that. And I'm always, telling her that, you know what? God loves you regardless because you're a good person. And I know you have questions about God. You don't believe, but you are actually doing good things. And I like that. And I'm sure that one day you will know that what you're doing is godly. And then on the other hand, pardon me, but I do have friends who are Christian that I don't trust. I can't trust with anything that is going on in my life because you don't know where it's going to go, how they're going to judge you. So for me, that's why I have a very open mind. I don't, all those are just labels. Christian, if you're Christian and you're not acting like Christ, then what's the point? Christ.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Christ didn't look down on anyone. He didn't. He accepted everyone. So if everyone would just think like that and just have a very easy way of thinking about people, life would be so much better. But everybody thinks, not everybody, a lot of people think they're better than the next person without even getting to know them, mm-hmm.
Well, that segues into your permanent happiness discussion, which we're going to have, because I think when we become happy within our hearts, this is mm-hmm. when we stop judging and criticizing and blaming and punishing other people. But before we get into that, and we definitely want to talk about permanent happiness, let's talk about your daughters. Now, where in your journey, you have two young daughters, actually. So where in your journey did they appear? Were you here in the States when they were born?
Yes. So my older daughter, who's now 21, she was born here in the States. She was born during our transition. So we had her here, but we were still, transitioning back and forth and moving our things from England here. So she was born here. But in fact, she it's funny. She remembers things from when she was an infant. She's like, Mom, you remember when we were on this train? And I'm like, how do you remember all that? Are you sure you're not making it up? But they were both born here. So she's 21 and she kind of went through all those transitions and moving from, she remembers living in the Bronx, in Yonkers, and then moving to Atlanta. And then the younger one, who's now 15, was also born here. So my 21-year-old is a rising junior in college, and the younger one is going into 10th grade. And they're wonderful. Yeah.
Now, are you a traditional Nigerian mother who wants her children to become an engineer, doctor, or lawyer?
No, absolutely not. I want my kids to follow their passion, follow their dream, and be useful to humanity. That's all I tell them. I just tell them that the reason you're here is to have joy in your heart, have peace in your heart, and to be useful to the person next to you. Because if you're not useful to anybody else, then you there's no point in you being here. That's what I tell them. Just help people, help yourself first, because if you're not strong and, healthy and all that, you can't help anyone else. No, absolutely not. My older daughter has no interest in medicine. They're both very creative. They both play. My older daughter plays the guitar and she sings. They both have lovely voices. They got that from their dad. They got the lovely singing voice from their dad. So they're both very creative. My younger one loves to act. She also plays the piano. She's learning how to play the guitar. So my older daughter, she's decided she wants to go into media studies, entertainment business, that kind of field. And I've told her, do it, pursue it, whatever makes you tick. And my younger daughter wants to help the world. She wants to be a psychologist. So not medicine directly, but she's talking about being a psychologist. And I told her, that's fine. If that's what you'd like to do, do it.
Okay, now I have to ask you this question. I'm a mom, and you're a mom, and you have a focus and a passion on permanent happiness. How are you manifesting that or teaching that or inspiring that in your daughter's lives? Because I know for you, working, inspiring, and empowering young women, that is your passion. So how have you been able to share this with your two daughters?
Mostly by example. I'm basically just doing what my parents did around me. I make sure that my choices are good choices because, you know, we both know, listeners know, that you can talk from now until eternity to your kids. If you're actually not doing what you're saying, it's not going to work. So I figured that out very early, that especially for my older daughter, they're both wonderful girls, but they both have different personalities. My older daughter doesn't like me talking much. She is very quiet and she just does more of observing. So for her, I know that that is more effective. So for permanent happiness, I just make sure that, you know, I'm myself and they observe me making good choices. I'm not perfect. They've seen me cry, they've seen me laugh, they've seen me dance, they've seen me break down, but I recover from all that. So, you know, they've seen all the truth in what I do, and I just lead them by example. And I do talk to them as well, but I've realized, and this is what I tell my patients in the office too, especially with obesity, perfect example. You cannot be overweight and expect your kids to be normal weight. So, you know, you're the parent, you're responsible, because you have parents in the room. We tell them their kids are overweight, they're obese, and they're wagging their finger at the kid in the room saying, do you hear the doctor? The doctor is saying you should stop eating. And I'm thinking to myself, but mom, you are really overweight too, you know, but I say it in a nice way. So you have to, our kids are mirrors. They're going to mirror what we're doing. So that's how I've been able to impart it in them, just by, mostly by example. Yeah.
And that's really wonderful. And how do they respond? Your children are, you know, they're Americans now. I mean, they were born here, yes. So they're Americans. And they're influenced by a very American culture, especially the young people, as your children are. How do they respond to this? I mean, are they typical American kids and go, oh, please, mom, you know, you know, and kind of fight you on your values? Or have they been very receptive to learning what you call? I know you talk about the three. There are basically, you say there are three steps that you yes. need to take to ensure permanent happiness. How do they respond? I mean, do you see them kind of embracing the things that you're teaching young women?
Yes, they are. I'll say they are. The three steps, I could easily say that they are. Of course, they are not perfect kids. We've had, you know, ups and downs with everything. They resist some things that I say. And, you know, they are a lot more, in some ways, I'm a lot more traditional than they are. And there's some parts of American culture and, you know, just evolving culture that I don't quite agree with. So there's some things that we disagree on. But the main, you know, aspect of permanent happiness, they understand that you have to take care of your body, take care of your spirit, help other people, you know, things like that, be a good person. So they do get the majority of it. I'm not saying we agree on everything, but, you know, yes, but the majority of it, yes, they do practice.
That's fantastic. And so you've kind of blended from our first conversation in your three steps. It sounds as if you've blended pieces of your Muslim background and your Christian training, because you gave the three steps, and I'm just going to repeat them because they're well worth repeating and discussing. Number one is to make sure that your spiritual and physical life are nourished, so that
yes.
nourishing your spirituality, being a practicing whatever, but having ways that you are present to and that you're mindful about what you're believing and how you're living and how you're physically taking care of yourself. So the good news is that self-care now, self-care is really becoming popular. And that step, that first step, is all about self-care, Yabo. I mean, that is...
Yes, it is.
You know,
yes.
And I think... You know, I was raised in a family where self-care was not possible because there was so much dysfunction and codependency going on that you didn't take care of yourself. You were too worried about getting everybody else's approval or staying out of everybody else's way so that they didn't punish you, you know. So that's a great first step. The second one that you said is nourishing others. Do you want to talk about that and share that with us about using our gifts and what have you for others?
Yeah, that one's super important. It really is. And if you remember when we just started talking about my kids, I told them that they should be useful to humanity. that's part of it. That's part of it. It's about nurturing people. So we have to use our gifts. Everybody who's born, as soon as you take your first breath, I believe your gifts are activated. As soon as you're alive and kicking, your heart's beating, your gifts have been activated. I know many people keep asking the question, even in their 40s, 50s, 60s, but what are my gifts? I don't know what my gifts are. That may be beyond the scope of our discussion today, but we need to use our gifts to, first of all, influence ourselves positively and then use it to influence other people. So if your gift is cooking or writing or mentoring or playing the guitar or you're good at math, whatever your gift is, make sure that you've discovered it. Make sure that it is making you feel fulfilled. It's making you, you know, leap out of bed in the morning. And make sure that you're using it to positively influence other people. And you don't have to positively influence 10,000 people. It could be one or two people that, you know, your calling is to influence. So people are always thinking on big, large scales, like, oh, if I'm not talking to a mega audience, like all the stars out there. No, it's not everybody who's called to do that. Your calling may just be to mentor people in your community or to mentor a neighbor or a few people, you know, around you. So, you know, whether you're influencing one or a million, you're still influencing. So that one's super important.
It's about bringing your gifts and bringing your own passion to other people so that they can share in that. And more importantly, we need community. We need to belong. We're herd animals. We are gravitating.
I like that. Yeah.
Well, we are. I mean, I think about it sometimes. You know, think about the zebras running on that. You know, we're herd animals. We want to belong together. We want to be together, and it has to do with our primal safety needs. We want to feel safe, and we feel, you know, there's safety in numbers when we are with other people, when we relate to other people, when we connect with other people. So this is not only good for other people, but this is good for us. We're going to have to take another break, but last but not least, you talked about living by the fruits of the Spirit. That's a really good one. So we're going to hold that until we come back from the last commercial break. We're going to talk about living by the fruits of the Spirit, and then we're going to talk about all of those wonderful qualities. You gave me a long list of things that are the most important things that we need to develop as human beings. So we will touch all of that when we come back. Don't go away, listeners. We will be back very shortly.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way.
What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful peer presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
My guest is Dr. Iyabo Ojikutu. Dr. Ojikutu is a board-certified pediatrician and a fellow of the American Academy of Pediatrics. She's also the author of a wonderful book titled Permanent Happiness, and she writes to inspire and empower young women in their lives. Before the break, we were talking, Iyabo, about the fruits of living by the fruits of the Spirit. Can you please expound on that for us? And then we want to talk about that long list of wonderful, wonderful qualities that we talked about being so important to develop in our lives.
Yes, that's really important. And it is from people who've heard, people who are Christian who are listening in probably have heard about the fruits of the Spirit. And there's nine of them. It's a Bible verse, but it applies to every single human being. It doesn't mean that it's a religious thing. It's just trying to constantly change your character just so that you're a blessing to other people. And there's nine of them, and I will list them. They are love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control.
You also gave me patience and resilience, too. I've got a list
in front of
me.
I gave you that, too, yeah. And those kind of blend in with the others. And like I said that day, it's really tough being one without the other. How can you be kind without being patient?
Yes, you know, exactly.
Can you have self-control without being, you know, at peace? Yeah. So
What's really interesting here is that we live in a culture which is the complete opposite of gentle and meek. It's the complete opposite of patience. It's the complete opposite of self-control. Just look at our American culture. Now, you're from another culture, which is such a blessing because you can compare. You can see the good stuff. You can see the challenging parts.
Yeah.
And you've been here for a while, so you can see how we in the States and how technology and the incredible pace of life here in the United States is really going against so many of these qualities. Do you want to give us your reflection and your experience of that, being here for as long as you have been and coming from another culture, which I know that you go back home from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
What do you notice? What are you becoming aware of and seeing what is influencing your children and our culture?
Oh, that's a loaded question. Yes, I think about that a lot. I actually ponder that in my quiet time. I journal about that a lot. There's pros and cons for the three continents I've lived in. Obviously, I lived in Africa until I was 22. Then I lived in Europe until I was 28, and I've been in the States since then. There's pros and cons for each, and I miss each one. Well, I'm in the U.S., but I miss Europe and Africa for different reasons. I miss the upbringing at home. Gentleness and self-control were things that I observed a lot in family and people around me. You could not talk back at an adult growing up, you know. And I tell my kids that the way kids talk back here, talk at adults, talk back at teachers, talk back at authority. When I first got here, I couldn't come to terms with my daughters calling their teachers and the head of school by their first name. I still haven't gotten to terms with it, but, you know, it's what it is, and that's fine. How can you be calling your head of school by their first name and not calling them Mr. something or Miss or Mrs. something? So, you know, those parts I miss, the respect for authority also. I'm not saying everybody in Africa, before people, you know, object. I'm not saying everybody in Africa is meek and polite, but the general consensus there is that you have to respect adults, you have to respect authority. And authority, I mean anybody who has authority over you. So even if you are at the checkout counter and there's somebody who's checking you out, you need to respect them. You know, if there's a cop who stops you, you need to say yes, sir, yes, ma'am, and just be obedient. Or put your hands behind you and just be obedient because they're authority. You don't talk back at your teachers because they're authority. So that part I do miss about Africa, and I try to instill that in my kids, that you have to respect everyone. You respect self-control, gentleness is important. The parts of Europe I miss, honestly, and I'm in a relationship with an English guy now, and we talk about it all the time because he was born in London, but we met here, which is interesting. He's also been to Lagos a few times for work. But we talk about that all the time, that the U.S. is good for being able to, so if you want to, like I opened my business, you know, that kind of capitalist kind of nature, like you want to make it big, the American dream, you want to earn all this money and buy this and do that. It's all good for that. All the material stuff. But when it comes to, you know, just family togetherness, having quiet time, being able to walk. I love walking. My spirit is linked to nature. I just feel like there's something in me. I have to be outside. You know, I miss all that about London and England. You can step out. You don't even have to have a car. You can walk everywhere. You don't really get that in America. Everybody's in their cars and going through drive-throughs all the time. You get home, you remote control your garage, you drive in and it's down, you hardly see your neighbors. I miss that part of Europe, that part where, you know, there's people walking around, there's that tightly knit family togetherness. There's more of that in Europe. So honestly, Dr. Donadia, there's pros and cons for every continent. One just has to make the most of where one lives. But America is very fast and it's all about the material stuff.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And one of the things, I mean, I'm trying to tie in this conversation about culture with permanent happiness because it seems to me, and I could be wrong, and as we're coming to the end of the show, I really want to get your opinion about this. But when we talk about permanent happiness, to stay happy in your core, to be able to meet whatever comes at you and not get knocked over by it. that there are certain things, the fruits of the Spirit, that in fact are critical. And yet, in the culture, in our American culture, it seems unfortunate that the focus is always, and not, when I say focus, I mean what we're seeing in the media, what we're hearing, the communication, is focused on everything but the fruits of the Spirit.
I agree with you.
When we talk, I mean, there is kindness and there is goodness. There's a wonderful good news network. You can actually hear good news and go on the internet and type in good news network and hear the good stories and the happy stories of what's happening. But gentle and meek, within the last year, I have yet to meet a gentle and meek person. I've been thinking about this a lot. I'd love to hear what you have to say. Yes, self-control, resilience for sure, and there is joy out there. Patience, not so much. Peace, maybe. Kindness and goodness, a little bit. But when we look at, you know, these fruits of the Spirit, what do you think? I mean, it's kind of wonderful that, you know, you grew up outside this culture. What do you think about where we're heading? Because your mission is to inspire and empower young women, and it's kind of like pushing the rock up the hill. So in closing the program, what would you say to young women in terms of, you know, really living by the fruits of the Spirit in order to be empowered and in order to have that resilience, what would your message be to them?
So, yes, my message to young women will be, remember to always take the focus off of other people and remember to always refocus back on yourself. And I know that's a heavily loaded statement, but basically what that means is, as women especially, we're always running around trying to please other people. If we're not trying to please our kids, we're trying to please our spouse, we're trying to please everyone at work. We're just trying too hard, and then we forget ourselves. So the fruit of the Spirit, I know, is mostly referring to how we are in relation to other people, but you actually have to start with inner peace. You have to actually start with making yourself at peace and at joy, and then you can radiate all these things to other people. Don't be so hard on yourselves. Don't, you know, feel like everybody is against you. There's a lot of women that carry too much load on their heads because of the actions of other people. So remember to always refocus back to yourself. So, because if you're not enriching yourself, you're not nourishing your spirit and your physical self, you're not going to be able to help other people. You're not going to be gentle or have self-control. When I'm not happy, I don't exhibit, and I say this humbly, I don't exhibit much self-control or much patience. I don't. Then I have to make sure I reset myself and remember, yeah, but okay, you need to calm down. Remember the fruit of the Spirit. So I would recommend whoever is listening to write all these 9 fruits of the Spirit into their journal and just really think about what they mean and try to practice them every day. And remember that all 9 of them, and the reason why it's actually called the fruit, it's not the fruits, plural, it's singular. The reason that's because all those characteristics are a whole. They're a unified whole. They're not independent of each other. Each one blends into the other. So just make sure that, again, it goes all back to self-care, right?
Absolutely.
It goes back to self-care. So young women, take care of yourselves. Your kids and your spouse will not want to be around you if you're not practicing the fruits of the Spirit.
Absolutely. Let's talk about your book, Permanent Happiness Can Be Found. Where can they find it? Can they find it on Amazon? Where can they purchase it?
Yes, it's on Amazon, and I have it in print and on Kindle. So it's on Amazon.com.
Yes, Permanent Happiness. And you have 2 other books. One you are currently working on, and you've got another book that is not yet published. So I know we're going to be hearing a lot about you, Doctor. I'm so pleased that you could take the time to be on the show today and share your story and your wisdom and your insights. And it has been such a pleasure. And listeners, don't forget to come back next week to join us for another program on Living Above the Drama that is about inspiring, educating, and uplifting.